right. Thank you very much, Jemima. I always enjoy that piece, don't you? I really do. And Jemima plays it so beautifully. There was an incident in my childhood that keeps playing over and over in my mind. And I've never told anybody this before, not even my wife. I'm going to tell you about it today. I'm going to describe it to you the best I can remember, now that I have your complete attention, because you wonder what it is, don't you? What did he do this time? All right. I grew up on a farm. My dad bought a section of land, which was quite big. He bought it during the war while he was in the service. I don't know how he met. He told me the story one time. I asked him before he died, so how did you happen to get this place? And he explained the whole story to me. It was quite amazing. I didn't know that. And then he moved on the property after the war. And he farmed. And we learned to drive tractors at a very early age. We were driving trucks when we were 9 years old. True. It was a dirt road. Nobody came down the road. Didn't matter. And we drove from one part of the property to another. But tractors, we were 7 and 8 years old. We were driving. I'm serious. Driving tractors. Now, I don't know how old I was. Dad had a couple of tractors. And one particular day, we were way back somewhere, and he was doing some work. And I needed to take he told me to take the big tractor. And I'm telling you, it was a big tractor, not the little Fordsons or Fords, you know, the little gray things you see. I'm talking about a big one. And back in that part of the country, that was a big tractor for those in those days. We're talking in the 50s. And he said, we'll take your little brother. And so that kind of dates it. I think he was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years old. I can't take him with you. So I sat him on my lap, and I was about, the best I can figure, 10 or 11 years old. And this was a big tractor. I mean, this was a big piece of machinery. And between where we were working and the house was a creek, a deep creek. And over it was a bridge, quite a substantial bridge. Now, that bridge had a couple of logs going across it that way with oak boards going across crossways, and you drive across that bridge. Well, on the way over, I'd done this before, but on this particular day, the wheel, I heard some cracking sound. It was right on the very edge, one half of the wheel, the big tractor wheel, this high, you know, was half off the board. And the bottom of that creek was a good 15 feet down. It was a very deep creek. And, you know, steep banks on both sides, and it was long enough. And I looked down, and I saw that. And I just froze. Well, it's a good thing I did, because the tractor eventually worked its way back on more safer ground. But the edge of the boards were cracking. And all that needed to have happened was that tractor wheel to go off. That tractor would have gone off. It would have killed me. It would have killed my little brother. And terrible things would have happened. I mean, in terms of the terrible grief and emotional damage that could have been done to my parents, my father's endeavor to make a living on the farm. It would have been something they would have lived with until the day they died. If they would have blamed themselves for entrusting someone as young as me with a big piece of machinery, it would have been said to them by family, by authorities, by friends, neighbors, that you shouldn't have let that boy drive that tractor in that way, take his own little brother and then drive off, and the wheel goes off the bridge and then it topples over and crushes both of them, you know, a good 15 feet down. I remember the scene as vividly as it was yesterday. And I've never told anybody about this, but it's played over and over again in my mind. And only later in life had I looked back on it. And it keeps reoccurring of what could have happened and what I had done or had come so absolutely close to. Now, here's the way I believe. I believe I got saved that day. I'm telling you. I look back on it. It just burns in my mind the picture of that tire. Just, I don't know why it stayed where it did, why those boards did not just break off from the weight of this tractor. And I don't know why it didn't, but it didn't. That was the day I was saved. That was the day my little brother was saved. And everything else then was saved in terms of the terrible things that could have resulted as if that would have happened. Now, perhaps it's only in the mind of the believer. People might say that. But I know on that day I was saved. Maybe that's why it plays over and over again in my mind. Well, that got me thinking. Were there other times? Well, yes, there were. Many of them. Now, some I can tell you about, and some I would rather not talk about. But when I began to recount the times that I got so close to losing my life or doing something so stupid that I was saved, something happened that prevented me from an action that would have happened, that would have taken my life. If it had not have taken my life, at least my life would have been changed forever for the worse, or in a way in which it was not recoverable. That's how bad some things were. Now, what got me thinking about this? If God did this once for me, perhaps he did it a number of times. And as I said, there were a number of times. Many times we put it down to luck. Maybe we say it just sort of happened that way. The more I think over the numerous instances in my life, God did some things. I know he did some things. The one thing that I was on my way into the military service. I was on my way to Vietnam, and I was very happy for it. And something changed in such a way I had absolutely no control over and got me going in a totally different direction. And I look at that and I just shudder. If God did not step in and make some changes or do something to make me do something entirely different. Now, I've told you that story before in a sermon. I don't want to repeat that. I don't like to talk very, very much about myself. All I'm trying to do is to illustrate a very, very important point. But there were so many times that he changed my mind in a certain situation. He changed another person's mind, or the situation just changed. It seems like, you know, the steam and the fire just sort of went out of it, especially when it was a very dangerous situation. One time the police just happened to show up. I never could figure that one out and stop some pretty bad things from happening. And around about now, you might be wanting to ask the question, well, what kind of a life did you lead anyway? Well, I know you're probably asking that. Well, I'll say this. One where there were a lot of angels very busy. Now, this was when I had no interest in the church. I will tell you, I had no interest in it. But I look back and see some of the things we got into and we got up to. And we wonder, how in the world did we ever do this? Well, now you look back on it, you understand how literally stupid and senseless some of the things you did were. Now, I could put these incidents down to coincidence, but there were too many times, especially that first one. And that's the first one I remember that I can recall. And then but there were a number. I got a list. I made a list. I wanted to know every time that I believed, that I could see God could have directly intervened for me in my life. I wanted to know that. And I did. And I didn't. I'm not making a lot of things up. I just know I can remember them. They're in my mind. Where things could have gone one way, it would have been so bad. And something stopped it. and it went the other way. Now, somehow, as a result of that, I do feel an obligation. Now, you might say, God doesn't do anything to make you feel obligated, surely. I want you to notice the scripture. 2 Chronicles chapter 32. 2 Chronicles 32. There's a statement that always intrigued me. Verse 24, 2 Chronicles 32, 24 through 26. In those days, Hezekiah was sick and near death, and he prayed to the Lord, and he spoke to him and gave him a sign. That was when Hezekiah was healed, by the way, of the sickness from which the prophet Isaiah came and told him he was going to die. Now, you don't find that in 2 Chronicles, you'll find that in 2 Kings. Which is the account of the same story. And gave him a sign. That was the sundial going back, shadow of the sundial going back so many degrees. But Hezekiah did not repay according to the favor shown him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore, wrath was looming over him and over Judah and Jerusalem. Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, and he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come upon them in the days of Hezekiah. Now, Hezekiah did not repay, as it says, according to the favor shown him. Now, can we repay God for the favor he has shown us? That's the question. Can we repay him? Do we have anything to repay him with? Maybe we don't know of anything he ever did for us. Now, and that maybe you feel you don't have anything to repay him for. I think you ought to think about that for a minute. I think you could make your own list where God has stepped in, he intervened for you. Perhaps there are times when he simply managed a situation where you would learn something from it. But I would say this. If you're here and your mind is opened and you have been led by God, God has been with you. God has intervened in your life many times, numerous times. I would have no doubt about that. But it's important that you know about him. It's important that you think about him and consider that. And that's why I went through that. I wanted to know, well, is this just a lot of coincidence? These are just sort of happenings. Did things just sort of happen for the better? I'll tell you that in my case, it did happen for the better, and not because of anything I did, because I was trying to do just the opposite. Now, one of the things that God had against the Israelites is that they forgot what God did for them. In Psalm 78, about this time now, I hope maybe a few incidences are running in your mind now where you know, or you can at least suspect, that God did get you out of a bad situation. Psalm 78, verse 40. How often they provoked him in the wilderness and grieved him in the desert. Yes, again and again, they tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel. They did not remember his power, the day when he redeemed them from the enemy, when he worked his signs in Egypt, his wonders in the field of Zoan. This is northern Egypt when they came out. Turned their rivers into blood and their streams, and they could not drink. Sent swarms of flies among them, which devoured them, and frogs, which destroyed them, etc. And it goes on with a whole list here as to what God had done for them. And he says, they forgot what God had done for them. And these are well-documented, well-rehearsed incidences that you and I don't doubt. And this is what happened to their fathers, forefathers, going back several generations at this point. But those particular people that David is writing about, the Israelites, These are things they personally saw. They were there. They saw this with their own eyes. They experienced it. They knew God was doing this. There was not a question in their mind, not a coincidence, not luck. These things really happened. It really did. And it says they don't remember that. That's quite, I think I see that as quite amazing. Verse 10 and 11, same chapter. They did not keep the covenant of God. They refused to walk in His law and forgot His works and His wonders that He had shown them. Marvelous things He did in the sight of their fathers in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan and so on, and He divided the sea. Walking through the sea, what would that do for you? Now, this is quite amazing. You say, well, if I was there, man, I would just obey God. I would never rebel against Him. Look what I saw Him do. Yeah, how could you forget so easily? Now, that's the point I'm making here. Let's go for one more point here. Psalm 106, verse 7. Psalm 106, verse 7 through 9. Our fathers in Egypt did not understand Your wonders. They did not remember the multitude of Your mercies, but rebelled by the Red Sea, Nevertheless, He saved them for His name's sake, that He might make His mighty power known. He rebuked the Red Sea, and it dried up, and He led them through the depths, and so on. Well, now that's quite amazing. Now, you can forget real easy, especially when you want your own way. In other words, a person can conveniently forget. And when they really want their own way and they're caught up in the emotion in it, well, you don't remember this. It fades from a person's memory. Maybe they don't want to remember. You know, if you will simply stop and take the time and remember what God did for you when He did it, especially surrounding your conversion, your time where you came into the truth, the decisions you had to make, how the way was made for you. I know maybe a lot of things have happened since then, but I'm talking about what happened then. What would that do for you? Or any other time that He may have stepped into your life and saved you. As I said, I've got a list. Now, a person might say, well, I think it was sort of an accident. I'll tell you, there were some I could describe to you. There's no way it could ever have been an accident. God did step in, and God saved me. And here I'm going along all this time. I knew they happened because those moments etch clearly in your mind. But what do we attribute them to God? Do we say, this is what God did? Well, say, well, God's just not doing the... What? Angels got better things to do. No, wait a minute. Hold it. Either God is there, He is a personal God, and He does step in, He does intervene, He can see things that are going to happen long before you do, and He is able to make decisions. Angels are able to make decisions so fast, so rapidly, and change a situation, and He will do it in such an unobtrusive way. You know what that means? That means He doesn't make a big show about it. He doesn't say, well, lightnings came down, I heard music playing, you know, the trumpets blew, you know, the wind blew, the dark clouds came over, and God spoke, and then this happened. It doesn't happen that way. God doesn't intrude in that way. God does it in, may I say it, the most humble and the meek manner possible. He just simply does it. That's up to you to figure out, okay, what did He do or what didn't He do for you? Now, if we go through our whole life and we say, I don't know what God did for us. Well, okay, I will say that you are about as spiritually sterile as that chair you're sitting on. I think you ought to be thinking in your mind the incidences where God did step in and intervene. And we need to think about it. And we need to ask the question, how can I repay? Do I repay? Is it possible to repay or render to the Lord for what He has done for you? That's the question. I think it's a very simple question, but I think there is a great deal in this for us. Psalm 116, verse 12 through 19. Psalm 116. Let's understand what it means to repay and what you can pay and what you can't pay. 116, verse 12. David says this, "What shall I render to the Lord?" The word render simply means to pay. That's what it means. "What shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits toward me?" Well, what are they? Well, I think we need to think about what his benefits are. What has he done? How has he helped? What has he given to us? What has he provided? If we say, "Everything I have, I've worked hard for." Well, we appreciate that fact. But I will tell you this, God gives, and God blesses, and God makes success of things when you can't. Now, that's a fact we should think about. He says, "I will take up the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows to the Lord now in the presence of all his people." What vows? Would he pay then? What would he say? How would you feel then when you know God did something for you? What would you say in your heart, in your mind, says, "You know, I really want to do this for God. I really want to serve God. I realize I should be this way. I realize this got me into trouble and I don't ever want to do that again, and God saved me." These are your vows to God in that sense. I'm not saying a literal vow in the way that they did it back then, but sometimes we do say things in our minds and we appreciate it at the time. And he said, "Look, don't you forget that. You pay what, if you say, I'm going to be a different person. Look what God did for me." Then you ought to be a different person. Yes, you can pay God back. But the question is, in what way? There's some things you can't do that we're going to see. In Psalm 51, verse 12, I mean, David owed God big time. I think we know that. Psalm 51, verse 12. Here's the psalm after his sin with adultery with Bathsheba and the murder of her husband, Uriah. Now, this was bad, and he wasn't going to get out of it. Nathan was telling him that. "You're not getting out of this one." Now, he repented, and God forgave him. And let's notice this. "Restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me by your generous spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, and sinners shall be converted to you." If there was ever anybody who could talk about the mercy of God to a transgressor, it would be David. Do you think he had experience? Absolutely, he had experience. He says, "I will teach transgressors your ways." Do you think he really felt deeply about wanting to teach transgressors about the ways of God? When he understood how much of a transgressor he was, you better believe it. Was there anything he could do to pay back? No, but he could do this. And that's what it means. It means this sort of thing. "Sinners shall be converted to you." He just knew that he could reach somebody with his story, with what he had been through and what he had done. And the mercy and the kindness God turned around and had on him undeservedly. He knew what was going on. And he was deserving of death. Nathan the prophet says, "You're going to die." Oh, man, that's it. Well, what do you do? He told Hezekiah that too, by the way. Hezekiah did not repay. His spirit was lifted up. Now, when he understood his problem, he got humbled again. And sometimes when things go well for us, we tend to lose sight of what God does for us, and we can tend to get a certain attitude about ourselves. And God says, "You forgot what I did. Deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God, the God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness." Wouldn't you want to do that? Yes. "Open my lips, and my mouth shall show forth your praise." Do you think that's what he wanted to do? You know, the people who were healed by Jesus Christ, you know what they did? They had to go and tell somebody about it. They could not. Jesus said, "Go and just go. Don't tell anybody." They couldn't help themselves. Why, they were so, and you know, and they it said more than one, he went away praising God. Well, you know, that's how David felt. "Lord, open my lips, my mouth shall show forth your praise." Not his own, but God's praise. "For you do not desire sacrifice, else I would give it." So what can you do? You can't repay him that way. That's what it means. You can't repay him that way with anything that you've got. "You do not delight in burnt offerings." You can't pay God back with this kind of sacrifice. And unfortunately, that's how some people began to see the sacrifices that they were doing. "I'll pay for my sins this way. They will now be paid for." That's not what those sacrifices were for. You had to show God now that you intended to serve him, and that you understand the tremendous sacrifice that he was going to make with his own son for the forgiveness of that sin. Now, verse 17, "The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite. These, O God, you will not despise." Now, how would you repay God? I would say with the way he would understand a broken spirit. And a broken and a contrite heart. You know what? You would be paying God back. You would be repaying him in the kind of response he would like to see from the mercy that he has had on you. Is to have that. That's what he wants right here. So can you repay God? Yes, you can. And you should. Now, let's notice a few other places. Luke 7:41. Keep in mind, you don't have anything to pay him back with in terms of anything that you might have. He certainly wouldn't want you to pay with your life, which you could do. Say, "Well, Lord, I got nothing to pay. I guess you have to take my life." Well, that's what was due, wasn't it? God didn't require that. Luke 7:41. I think we read this. Oh, we read this a few weeks ago on the sermon on forgiveness, experiencing the forgiveness of God. Luke 7:41. "There was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii, the other 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely forgave them both." Well, that's the way forgiveness is. It's free. It is. It is free. And you don't earn that, not by what you do thereafter. That's not the way it works. But so you're freely forgiven. "Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him more?" And Simon answered and said, "I suppose the one whom he forgave more." And he said, "Now you have rightly judged." And there was the woman then. He said, "You see this woman here? Her sins that are many are forgiven," as it says in verse 47. "But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little." And he said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." She understood what was done for her. And so therefore, she was prepared to respond in the appropriate way. What was she repaying him with? She had nothing to give him. Nothing. As the man in the parable said, they were freely forgiven. And there was absolutely nothing that woman could give him. But she gave him her devotion, her love. And I would suspect she turned out to be quite a different person after that. That's what forgiveness does. That is what when God does something for you, that is the way you repay him. Matthew 18:21. Here's a similar parable. 18:21-35. Now this is, again, it's similar. Once again, it has the same idea. Then Peter came to him, Matthew 18:21. Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? And I'm sure glad God doesn't count with me. The list that I made, that I told you about, it's a lot longer than seven. I think you could write a long list too if you sat down and thought about it. Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but 70 times seven. That's more like it for me, that is the times I thought about. And I'm sure that there are times that he intervened for me when I was about as stupid as you could get. The ones I remember. And I don't even know about the ones I don't remember. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents, but he was not able to pay. The master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. And the servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. And the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave the debt. And that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, so much less than this person's master forgave him for. 100 denarii. And he laid his hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, pay me what you owe. So this fellow servant fell down on his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me and I will pay you all. Exactly the same words. And he would not. And he went and threw him into prison until he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what had been done, they were very grieved. And the master, after he had called him, said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not have had compassion on your fellow servant just as I had pity on you? We're starting to answer the question, how do you repay the debt or repay God for what he has done for you? What's he saying? Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant just as I had pity on you? And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due him. So my heavenly Father will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses. So how do you properly respond to God's forgiveness? This is the way. That's what he says to do. Now, if you don't think you've done all that much, all that wrong, then maybe you will exact something from your brother. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll try. But God says, I don't think you really understand your sin if you do that. But there is a response then in which we need to have toward God if we understand what has happened. I'd look upon the things that God did for me as out and out favors. I could never repay him back. I had nothing. And I went on doing the same. I use the word stupid, and it really was. Went on and kept doing them until I realized what God has done for me. It took a while. And I will tell you, God was patient. He was patient over a number of years with me. And he had a lot more patience than I can even begin to imagine. That's the way God is. But God is waiting to see, well, what is their response? What will be the response when they really get the picture, when they really understand, when they really know? Romans 13, verses 7 and 8. Romans 13. Oh, we are debtors, all right, but let's find out how so. Render to all, therefore, to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due. Custom to whom customs. Fear to whom fear. honor to whom honor. Now, if you're going to get along in this world, that's what you've got to do. Pay your taxes, and it's not your intentions. You can even make a mistake or whatever, but you still got to pay them. That's just the way it is. And somehow, and you don't get off. Okay, that's what you owe. That is what you've got to pay. The next verse says this: owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. You should contrast both of those scriptures that I read to you. Unfortunately, in your Nelson's version of the Bible, they have a little break in there. But you should make the connection between those two. Yes, I owe God a lot. But how I repay is of great importance. I can't make up for anything I ever did wrong. I cannot make up for anything in the sense or give him back anything. I don't have enough. There's nothing that could ever remotely come close to paying him back for what he's done for me. I just can't do it. I don't have anything good enough or precious enough to pay him for what he has done for me. Now, Micah 6, verses 6 through 8 says this. Micah 6, 6 through 8. That's back in the Old Testament. Around just before Amos, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah. There we go. Micah 6, verses 6 through 8. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? The most precious ones you can get. Calves a year old. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams? 10,000 rivers of oil. This is enormous amounts here. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? The fruit of my body for the sin of my soul. Shall I do that? As he says, you might say, surely that would somehow appease God. That's not what God wants. You can't pay for anything. It's unpayable that way. He won't accept that. And that's how some people might tend to think. And when we get in the book of Romans, we're going to find out that is how they did tend to think. You can't pay for it. You can't work off that kind of debt. It's impossible. Verse 8's the answer. He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, as we read in the parable, and to walk humbly with your God, like Hezekiah didn't do after what God did to him. After what I know for many years I failed to do. I never got the point. I mean, if I was stupid enough to do the things in the first place, one would only surmise that I was stupid enough not to get the point after, which is correct. I'm just thankful one day I got it. And but it's the most spiritually exhilarating exercise. More than just an exercise, it does something for you to go back and to rehearse what God has done for you. What the Israelites forgot is what God did for them. I would not expect you to become emotionally switched on by what God did for Israel. That may be very important, but what God did for you personally, now that's important to you. It's not important to me. It's important to you, what God did for you. Now, that's what we need to think about. And as I said, if we don't think about these things, we're kind of in a spiritual no man's land. I mean, we're just dead. We're sterile. We just don't have it. We've got to, how much do we owe God? And what has God done for you? So we're starting to, we have been really answering the question, how do you repay God? There's a summary here, by the way. This is not, some people quote this to say, well, that's the Christian life. And no, that's not the definitive answer. He's simply making a different point here. that covers an approach, an attitude of what he wants you to do, or what you want you to become or be as a result of what you understand God has done for you. He's shown you what is good. Okay, do that. Dino covered that in the sermonette. Okay, we can't be that stingy that we say, oh, well, God never did anything for me. I don't see why I got to do anything for anybody else. No, that's not it. God did a lot for us. What does the Lord require of you? To do justly, really, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. That impacts everything you do. It really does. Let's notice in Romans 12, verse 1. Romans 12, 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. What's he saying? He's talking about all that he said before in terms of the fact that he has saved you from a generation. He's called you, and he's also shown in the previous three chapters, and for those of you who were at the Bible study, you heard me say this. The previous three chapters, he shows the wonderful salvation he's going to extend to all of mankind eventually. And he says, consider this. Consider everything that we've said so far up to chapter 12, verse 1. I'm not going to rehearse that for you, and we'll get that in time. That you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Maybe you always wonder why that's called a reasonable service. This is what it's talking about here. Consider what God has done, and it's only reasonable that you would have this kind of a response, that you would do this because of how it would affect you, of how it would so move you, how you would have such love for God because of what you knew, of the love that you knew he had for you and the mercy that he's had on you. It becomes a reasonable service, a sacrifice. So, what are you paying back with? Yourself. That's it. That's why he says a living sacrifice. You don't want a dead sacrifice. And a dead person doesn't do any good. You got to be alive. And do so in a way that now you have turned to God and you have become a living sacrifice. So after you know all that God has done for you, you give yourself to him as a sacrifice. Everything you do, then you become as mindful because of what God has done. Psalm 40, verse 5, just a couple more scriptures here. It kind of really nails the point home. Psalm 40, verse 5. David was very mindful of this. Over and over again in the Psalms, the one time that he wasn't, you know what Nathan said to him? When David sinned, you know the comment Nathan made to him? He said, you know, after all I've done for you, you turn around and you do this? After all I've done for you. And David knew it. David knew it. I mean, what was he going to say? He said, well, that was it. I mean, there was nothing but repentance to come to. That's all that was left for David. 40 verse 5. Many, O Lord my God, are your wonderful works, which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. So does God ever think about you? A whole lot. That's what he says here. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire. My ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. We don't go around saying, well, I guess I better obey God, or else something might happen to me. If I don't obey God, things aren't going to go well. Is that your approach? That wasn't his approach. He said, I delight to do your will. You see, that was the relationship. Verse 9, I have proclaimed the good news of righteousness in the great assembly. Indeed, I do not restrain my lips, O Lord, as you yourself know. Now, that is one way in which we do show the appreciation of God. I hope that we do, and I did write out a little note to everybody about our conversation, and I would hope that we would praise God, and we would think about what he's done for us. God has done a lot for you this week. You say, well, I don't know it. Well, perhaps we should become more attuned to it and think about it a little bit more. God has. He's done a lot for you. And it's something that we need to share amongst ourselves. We need to talk about. We need to show appreciation. And I would say this, that as we do rehearse that with other people, I would say that's one of the better forms of edification and encouragement that you can do for people. So we've already talked about it. As you rehearse what God has done, because it encourages them to turn to God and also look in their own lives and see where God has intervened for them. I want to conclude in Hebrews chapter 12 and the final verse, and go in a little bit into verse 13, chapter 13. Hebrews 12, 28. Chapter 12, 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. You know, let us have grace. Yeah. Now, let us have grace here. Let us understand what we have received, what we are receiving in terms of a kingdom that is sure to come. It can't be shaken. That's solid as a rock. Better than these banks who supposedly made a lot of profit here this past week. And they're still shaky. They're not very. So this kingdom is solid. It cannot be shaken. Let us have grace because it's given to us. He said, little children, it is the Father's good pleasure to give to you the kingdom. I mean, what do? Let us have grace then, by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. So there ought to be that kind of reverence and godly fear because of our knowledge of what he has given to us. Chapter 13, verse 1, let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Say, well, I never had that happen. How do you know? It says unwittingly. It says you didn't know. So you don't know whether you did or not, did you? But somebody came along and helped you. Somebody was sent. Was that an angel? I don't know. But he says it was. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them. Yeah. There's something you do. Those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. In verse 12, skipping on down there, verse 12, therefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Therefore, by him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. And do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. So what inspires you to sacrifice? I think when we see what God has done for us, the sacrifice that was for us, we recount the many things that he did for us when we were not deserving of it. No, you can't pay God back with anything that you have, but you can pay back God back by the way you live, by fulfilling his purpose for you, That is what God wants more than anything else. And anything he's ever done for you is so that you can and you will fulfill his purpose for your life.